The kids are grown up now and moved into homes of their own. But Our Lady of Perpetual Guilt still lives with me, an uninvited guest without manners enough to pack up and move on. Find a rich husband, my stay-at-home mother taught. You've got the stuff. You're pretty and smart. But no, I wanted to live a different life, a liberated life for a new kind of woman. Liberated not to be mother in her 1950s apron, turning the flour-caked pages of Betty Crocker's cookbook. Even a mundane meal becomes special with home-baked biscuits, it said. Mother made great biscuits and killer chocolate cake, while her lifeblood stagnated as she swallowed those mother's little helpers that kept the grief of dying dreams and ungrateful children from exploding like a grenade in her heart. How could she possibly want that for me? I wanted more. I wanted it all. A brilliant career in a fascinating field. A loving husband with whom I had perpetual great sex. Musically gifted children born spouting equations and speaking fluent French, who'd grow up to get advanced degrees in astrophysics from Princeton or become celebrated brain surgeons from Yale. A chance to save the earth, all the while getting enlightened in this very lifetime, while cooking gourmet meals made from scratch, cultivating buns of steel, practicing yoga, decorating my designer eccentric dream home, and ensuring world peace. The reality was slightly different. The children didn't enlist in quality time. They just wanted time, any time, period. They would gladly have traded a room full of toys for a morning of watching me read the newspaper in an egg-stained nightgown. They screamed as if to be abducted by aliens when I left them at dreaded daycare, clinging desperately to my legs and begging for mercy, fat, hot tears running down those angelic cheeks. As my heart broke, I hoped the daycare might build character and give them resilience. It gave me heartburn, muscle tension, and guilt. It also gave me runs in my pantyhose, in those sticky little handprints forged out of squashed bananas that decorate the working wardrobe of so many liberated moms. I vowed to do better, right after I got some sleep, say sometime in the next century. My husband suggested that sex might be nice. Sure, just give me a few minutes to finish up here. Let me check the mental list. Put kids to bed. Listen to their fears. Encourage their dreams. Read mind-enriching stories. Teach them to meditate, pray. Sing Justin to sleep. Rub Andre's back till he falls asleep. Do laundry. Clean toilet before Board of Health comes. Pick cat poop up off laundry room floor. Again, damn cat! Pray for low-flying hawk to sweep down in the night and eat cuddly family pet. Stop! That's definitely not nice. Make note. Gotta brush cat tomorrow. Out of hairball medicine. Make appointment for camp physicals. Call mother now! Call mother yesterday. She starts the conversation with a long pause. It lasts for years. Oh, is that you? I thought you were dead. Maybe that's the only way to get some rest around here, I retort. Apparently I'm not funny. She must have thought I was lazing around the spa, not calling her because I was eating grapes, getting massaged, and waiting for my nails to dry. Time for bed now. Set alarm for 5 a.m. sharp. Gotta jog before the kids get up. Gotta stay in shape so that my husband will find me attractive, if he can find me at all. He's asleep, thank God. At least that solves the sex problem for tonight. Morning comes quickly. I run 3 miles before it's light, wake the kids, give them breakfast, pack a healthful organic lunch that makes them wail with indignation. They beg for Twinkies and Wonder Bread like their friends eat, the ones with real mothers who know better than to bake dense brown bread with soy flour and wheat germ. Then it's on to the daily daycare double. Will Mom be able to run for it and make a clean getaway while the kids are distracted? That's 1 point for her. Or will it be another leg-clenching, heart-wrenching morning? That's 2 points for Our Lady of Perpetual Guilt, a fierce composite of criticism, real and imagined, from all perfect mothers who've ever lived. She soon racks up enough points that I decide we must hire a nanny, even if I have to sell pencils on the street to finance it. The come-to-the-house nanny, with the expensive Harvard Child Development degree, whose take-home pay is practically more than mine, turns out to be certifiably loony and in need of serious help. Every night when I return from work, I have to do at least 30 minutes of intensive psychotherapy to keep her from fulfilling her latent potential as a guest on the Jerry Springer Show. I wonder, who is working for whom? I'm dying to fire her. But she's better than daycare, isn't she? I'm relieved when she quits, but I cry anyway. I miss work for soccer games and school plays, saxophone recitals and wrestling meets, track meets and doctor's appointments. Time off is time stolen and returned with usurer's interest. I pay for those hours with the marrow of my bones, working to make them up at midnight or on weekends, those special days of rest when you get to do a week's worth of errands, cleaning, cooking, and outings with the kids. Weekends are filled with precious moments on your knees, picking up dust bunnies that harbor generations of spider mites. Most of this woman's work goes unseen and unsung. "Are you a workaholic or something?" whines my husband, sipping a beer in his trusty Speedo and pruning his bonsai collection. Flashes of homicide, or at least visions of him in a French maid's costume, employed by an obsessive-compulsive little man with waxed mustaches, a pointed goatee, and a long list, pass through my formerly compassionate heart. I take a deep breath and smile. No, just a working mother. No one told me it would be like this. No one knew. Or at least very few. Then no one would admit it. To do so was politically incorrect. We were liberated and loving it, weren't we? The health and corporate gurus just kept talking about living a balanced life. I guess that means not letting the whole house of cards tumble over and knock you flat. Although, in a pinch, fainting in action is good for a rest. Meanwhile, life goes on, and you do the best you can. When hard at work is Dr. Science when the boys are small, I'm just one of the guys. A guy with ovaries. A guy with PMS who gets pregnant once in a while. But that's all invisible, or at least beside the point, which is to do science, get grants, compete, expand the lab, conquer the field, shine at the annual meetings, teach medical students, and do my part with other exciting, cutting-edge assignments like the library committee, of which I'm told by an endearingly patronizing little professor with a blue gravy-stained bow tie and a shy but lustful grin, I am the most decorative member. I'm back to work 6 days after my firstborn, Justin, arrives. Can't show any weakness or ask for any favors. They would think of me as second string, a minor player, And that's definitely not